All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is Crossover Thursday, where I am joined by the host of Locked On Seahawks, Corbin Smith, and we're going to be breaking down this week one matchup between the Atlanta Falcons and Seattle Seahawks.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So this season, guys, you can get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. See all the action from every game with full game replays. You can also replay an entire game and catch all the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this preeminent Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today we are kicking off our first crossover of the 2020 regular season, Crossover Thursday. You guys remember Crossover Wednesday? Well, we're moving it back one day to give you even better content, more of that early week content on this world-renowned podcast. But today I am joined by none other than Locked On Seahawks host Corbin Smith, and we are going to take you guys into the big questions and big answers that we have for each other and you for this week one matchup between the Falcons and Seahawks. You've heard me talk about some of these things already on the podcast earlier this week, giving my thoughts. We'll get Corbin's thoughts on some of those issues that we're sort of wondering about, like, are the Seahawks going to use two tight ends? How good is this secondary? How good is this pass rush, etc.? So we will get Corbin's thoughts on those subjects, as well as I will be sharing my own thoughts on his questions about the Falcons. But before we get into that matchup, I do want to touch upon the fact that Wednesday we had the first official injury report of the Falcons 2020 season, and sort of giving you the lowdown on the statuses of players like Marlon Davidson and Russell Gage, and how the Falcons may be dealing with some of those injuries along the defensive line, as your Locked On Falcons lead story, which we will jump into right now. So on Wednesday, we got our first injury report of 2020, and six names made the appearance on the list, with edge rusher Dante Fowler and offensive lineman Matt Hennessy being listed as full participants, despite being limited last week with ankle and knee injuries, respectively. Sitting out practice on Wednesday were cornerback Kendall Sheffield, who was seen in a walking boot on his foot, and edge rusher Charles Harris, who was been hobbled by an ankle injury already this week. Limited participants included wide receiver Russell Gage, who's dealing with a groin injury, and defensive tackle Marlon Davidson, still recovering from a knee strain that caused him to miss the past few weeks. The injuries to Gage and Davidson are the most notable, since both are starters as opposed to Sheffield and Harris, who are expected to be backups this year. But reports from Falcons head coach Dan Quinn seem to suggest that at least Davidson is on track to play this week. It's just a matter of whether or not he'll be on a pitch count. That injury to Davidson, as well as the one with Harris, does leave the Falcons thinner along the defensive line, especially in light of the fact that defensive end Steven Means is only recently activated from the reserve COVID-19 list. Means spent 10 days on that list, and one wonders, does that absence mean that he won't necessarily be in tip-top game shape to be a big factor on Sunday? If Means and Harris are limited, that leaves the Falcons fairly thin at defensive end, where the only backup behind starters Fowler and Tack McKinley is second-year defensive end Jacob Tuohy-Mariner. But the Falcons could try to mitigate any depth concerns by keeping Fowler and McKinley fresh as possible by deploying them primarily on passing downs and leaving the defensive end snaps on rundowns to players like Tuohy-Mariner, along with veteran Alan Bailey and second-year defensive lineman John Kaminsky. That is exactly the roles that those three players filled a year ago for the Falcons, but Kaminsky especially might need to pull double duty, since he'll likely be the prime candidate to fill in for Davidson should he be limited this game as well. Davidson is expected to man the other defensive tackle spot beside Pro Bowler Grady Jarrett on the team's passing downs entering the season. As for Gage's injury, there haven't been too many indications that his groin injury is serious, so it'll bear monitoring the rest of the week, since it's one of those injuries, just like a hamstring, that can be a bit nagging and difficult to heal. If Gage is out of the lineup, it's likely wide receiver Christian Blake will be tasked with filling his shoes to become the team's primary slot receiver. But it could also mean that some of Gage's snaps in the slot go to Julio Jones, who was very productive in that role last season after seeing an increased workload in the slot at the end of the season. Through the first 13 games of the season, Jones averaged about 85 yards per game, but over the final three games where the Falcons started running more of their offense through Jones, which featured a lot more opportunities for him in the slot, he averaged 126 yards per game. That included a season high 166 yards against the Jacksonville Jaguars in week 16, in which Jones played about 36% of his snaps in the slot, nearly doubling the percentage of snaps he played in the slot through the first 13 games. So the Falcons, if they are creative enough, should be able to find a way to navigate any injury concerns and issues when they square off against the Seattle Seahawks in week one on September 13th. So guys, there's your Locked On Falcons lead story, and we're going to jump into the crossover episode with Corbin Smith of Locked On Seahawks coming up on today's podcast. But before we get there, I'm wondering if many of you guys want to go back and revisit how Julio dropped 166 yards on AJ Bouye in that week 16 Jaguars game, or maybe you want to go back and revisit how Matt Schaub dropped 460 yards on that Seahawks defense last year. And now you can with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full game replays. You can revisit the all 22 with the coaches film. And if you don't have that amount of time, then all you really need is 45 minutes to see every snap of any game with the condensed version. It's all the action, all the football you can handle all in one place. You also can learn from the league's best players with over 40 NFL Game Pass film sessions. So you can check out Jamal Adams, Amari Cooper, and KJ Wright. Get inside the player's perspective as they break down the concepts and techniques that make them some of the best in the biz. NFL Game Pass also provides access to the entire NFL Films archive, so you can catch up on Good Morning Football, A Football Life, and Hard Knocks. Get it all by going to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops.
Welcome to the Locked On Podcast Crossover Thursday. I'm Corbin Smith of Locked On Seahawks, joining Aaron Freeman of Locked On Falcons. Aaron, I'm still having a hard time believing this when I'm saying this, given what we've dealt with the COVID-19 pandemic, but there's a regular season game, and it's coming up here in just a couple days. Seahawks heading to Atlanta to face the Falcons, and these teams always seem to have really interesting battles. Last year might have been the weirdest one that I have seen since Pete Carroll's been here. Seattle getting a 24-0 lead, and then second half they nearly gave up the game. And really, it was a perfect metaphor for Atlanta's season. The Falcons seemed to turn their season around in a big way after that game, winning 6 of their last 8, getting almost back to 500, kind of like the game. They almost came back to tie it, couldn't quite get there. But this is a team that I think has a really high ceiling in a talented NFC South this year if they can just keep people healthy. And I guess my big first question for you going into this matchup, I look at the receiving core. Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley are two absolute studs. Julio Jones, one of the best receivers in football. Calvin Ridley had the highest DVOA of any receiver in the league last year. But I guess my big question for you is, looking at this offense, you no longer have Austin Hooper. He's in Cleveland. Who is going to be that third target that steps up? Because they are going to need a third receiver if they're going to compete in that loaded division.
Yeah, Corbin, it's going to be interesting question to see sort of who emerges. I think, you know, obviously the Falcons offense is going to filter a lot through Julio and Calvin Ridley. But sort of, I think the player that they want to emerge as that third weapon is a player like tight end Hayden Hurst, who is replacing Austin Hooper. But I think one of the questions is, given that he's new to the team, new to the offense with the limited offseason, one of the concerns you have for Hayden Hurst is whether or not he's going to hit the ground running. Is it going to take the better part of this season and possibly into next season before him and Matt Ryan really develop that connection that Ryan had with Hooper that was developed over the last 4 years, that really did take really until Hooper's third season in Atlanta for it to really take off? Obviously, the Falcons want that to be fast-tracked a little bit. They also have Russell Gage, who is going to be their primary slot receiver. He did produce pretty well for the Falcons, replacing Mohamed Sanu in the second half of 2019. He's dealing with a little bit of a groin injury, so one wonders whether or not that's going to limit his effectiveness going into this game. But really, it's going to be those two. If Gage is limited in a major way, the question is sort of who's the guy off the bench that's going to have to step up in a major way. And it's probably going to be Christian Blake, given that he was the guy that they turned to last season for the most part when Julio went down for a game, and towards the last month of the season when Calvin Ridley missed the last three games of the season. So right now it's kind of Hayden Hurst is probably the best option. If Gage is limited in a major way going into this week one game.
And he's a tight end, which the Seahawks have proven throughout the Pete Carroll era that they're going to have a difficult time defending. So if he is going to hit the ground running and be available there for Matt Ryan as that third target, could be a guy that could be a big factor in this game. Let's talk Todd Gurley real quick here, a player that Seahawks fans are very familiar with. He's tortured the Seahawks for the last 4 or 5 years, even last year when everybody was saying Todd Gurley is done. When the Rams beat the Seahawks in week 14, he scored a touchdown, had a bunch of yardage both on the ground and in the air. A lot of people wrote him off with the Rams releasing him. But is it just me, or does this seem like the ideal place for him to land given his circumstances? Maybe not a feature back necessarily anymore, but still can be very valuable in that offense with the other weapons they have around him.
Yeah, that's the expectation with Gurley. And, you know, a lot of the things we've talked about on Lockdown Falcons over the last several months has been sort of how much does Todd Gurley have left in the tank based off of what I've seen from him last year, based off of all the reports coming out of training camp. It seems like there is still plenty of juice left in that tank. Whether or not he's going to be the Todd Gurley of old, peak Todd Gurley, as we've referred to it, in terms of the guy that can carry an offense and be that sort of offensive player of the year candidate and winner that he ultimately was in 2017, I don't think he's going to be at that level, but certainly a guy that can, you know, take 15 to 20 carries a game and really sort of give this Falcons offense a balanced rushing attack, which is really some of the things that they are really looking for going into this season. That was one of the big reasons why they hired Dirk Koetter and fired Steve Sarkisian last season. And now I think the Falcons are pretty confident that they have a running back that will be able to provide that. So really the big question with the Falcons is, do they have the offensive line that can give them the consistency on the ground that was sorely lacking the last couple of years? And one of the things that the Falcons are talking a big game about, and we'll find out on Sunday how, you know, whether or not they're going to live up to the hype in this regard, is getting back to the outside zone running scheme made famous by Kyle Shanahan. You guys in Seattle know that you used that for many years under Pete Carroll. They had some success under Sarkisian in 2017, and they went away from it last season, you know, confusingly went away from it because, you know, it's the adage of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why go away from something that's working? But that, to me, contributed to a major way for their running game to take a step back. Now they're going to re-implement it. And it seems like that combination of Gurley, who was very effective in that type of scheme in L.A., with here in Atlanta, now should give the Falcons the balance on the ground that they're desperately looking for.
I'm really curious to see how that Falcons offensive line looks, as you mentioned, because they had a lot of injuries last year. This is a team that's got a lot of high draft picks invested in that group, whether they were players that started with the Falcons or they came over in free agency. They have a lot of guys that were first and second round picks in the NFL. So if that group's fully healthy and they're playing at their top level, certainly could give the Seahawks front line that has plenty of question marks. I'm sure you'll be asking about that next quarter, but certainly could be a problem for Seattle in this game if that group is playing well and everybody's able to stay healthy. Let's go to the defense here real quick. This is a secondary that gave up a lot of big plays last year, and I know Russell Wilson had a heck of a first half against them in that Week 8 matchup, and especially throwing to Tyler Lockett, they had no answer for him. They draft A.J. Terrell in the first round out of Clemson, one of my favorite corners in this draft class. He fits that Dan Quinn, Pete Carroll defense as that longer athletic corner that you want on the outside. And then you got Isaiah Oliver, the other spot. There's a lot of upside there. And they've got Keanu Neal coming back from injury as well to really bolster that secondary. But there's a lot of youth there. And I don't know necessarily that A.J. Terrell is going to be super excited about his first game being against DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett.
Yes, it's going to be a big question. Obviously, Seattle has one of the better wide receiver duos in the entire NFL. The good thing you can say about Oliver, who had a very rough year as a starter last year, that the Seattle game was one of his better games that he performed. You know, DK Metcalf had a couple of touchdowns due to some coverage busts and miscommunications in the red zone. But for the most part, they kept him in check. But part of that is due to the fact that Lockett had such a big day, and the Seattle offense was able to run the ball effectively. They didn't really need Metcalf to step up in a major way. So one of the big things to sort of help neutralize Lockett, I think, what the Falcons are going to do is they picked up Darquez Dennard from Cincinnati. He's been one of the more productive nickel cornerbacks in the NFL quietly over the last couple of years in Cincinnati. So I think he's going to be a big pickup for them to help potentially slow down a player like Lockett, who you know, spends the majority of his time in the slot and is very productive over the middle of the field. And so if they can sort of contain Lockett, and if Oliver can have a repeat of some of the success and Metcalf have a relatively quiet day, I think I feel pretty good about this young secondary. And A.J. Terrell won't necessarily need to have to come in right away and be this top-notch corner, although, you know, all the talk coming out of camp is that he looks the part going up against guys like Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. So there is some confidence that if he is going to have to step up and have to deal with guys like Lockett and Metcalf, that he is capable of doing so. But obviously, given it's his first NFL game, NFL start, you know, if everybody else can take care of business, then I think they're put A.J. Terrell in a more favorable position that he won't necessarily have to hit the ground running and be an effective player right away.
And there are a few young cornerbacks in the league. They're going to have a better person to practice against to prepare for DK Metcalf than A.J. Terrell getting to go against Julio Jones every single day. Last but not least, we got to talk pass rush. If you're just listening, you've been hiding under a rock, the Falcons and the Seahawks were both god-awful at getting after the quarterback last year. They tied for second for last in the NFL in sacks with 28 apiece. Both these teams really struggled putting pressure on the quarterback in the game they played against each other. It was kind of embarrassing watching the Seahawks just let Matt Schaub sit back there, maybe the most immobile quarterback now in the NFL at this stage of his career, and he was just sitting back there picking roses and throwing darts, and nobody was coming after him. So Seattle, there's still some question marks there for them, but the Falcons went out and got Dante Fowler Jr. The Seahawks know him well, had 1.5 sacks against him in a game last year. Tack McKinley was starting to really break out a little bit his second season. Then last year had a little bit of a wall, battled some injuries during the season. What is your take at this point on where that pass rush is at, adding Fowler in? McKinley's still just 24 years old. Maybe this is the year that the light switch comes on and he really breaks out. Is there an X factor in this group that isn't necessarily drawing headlines that could help this pass rush be much better this year than it was in 2019?
Well, one of the reasons why the Falcons defense was able to turn things around in the second half and really sort of spearhead their 6-2 finish last year was because their pass rush stepped up. It was primarily driven by Grady Jarrett, their Pro Bowl defensive tackle. And they got some contributions from players like Adrian Claiborne and Jack Crawford, in addition to others in the second half of the season that gave some life to this Falcons pass rush. And the hope is that with the additions of Fowler, with a healthy Tack McKinley, who was nicked up for most of the second half of the season, and he's, you know, leaner, lighter, and presumably, you know, going to be able to play, you know, his style of football, which is, you know, balls to the wall for, you know, 60 minutes now, and at least better suited to do that due to improved conditioning. The hope is that the Falcons pass rush can pick up where they left off and be even better. So I think it's really going to be those three guys. Beyond that, they have a rookie in Marlon Davidson who's going to be lined up primarily beside Grady Jarrett, although he's dealing with a knee issue, so he might be a limited. The other player that's sort of expected to potentially carve out a significant role, especially this week, if Davidson is limited and the Falcons keep him on sort of a pitch count, so to speak, is going to be second-year defensive end John Kaminsky, who's going to line up on the interior in those passing situations, has some power. You know, they've been talking up him throughout the summer. in terms of a guy that has made the jump from year one to year two, and we'll get an opportunity to see how much of a jump he has made. He's very athletic, young player, a fourth round pick in 2019, but was very raw coming out of a Division II school, kind of relied solely on his physical gifts, which, you know, allows you to make some splash plays, but is not something that you can consistently rely on, due to the fact that NFL offensive linemen are also very good athletes and are very technically savvy. So that's going to be one of the big questions with Kaminsky. How much improvement has he improved his technique? Does he have pass rush moves, or is he just kind of this one note, you know, athletic freak, but may not be the consistent playmaker? So if there is an X factor in his pass rush, it's potentially John Kaminsky.
Kaminsky was a prospect that I liked a lot, but as you mentioned, coming from a D2 school, it looked like he was going to be a long-term project. And if you could end up developing his fundamentals, he's maybe a player that could turn into a really solid NFL pass rusher. So maybe in year two, they'll start to see some progress from him. Certainly an intriguing player. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to switch gears here. Aaron's going to take over as the host and grill me a little bit about the Seahawks heading into this season opener at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We'll be right back. This is the Locked On Podcast Crossover Thursday.
So there's still more to come on today's Locked On Falcons, Locked On Seahawks Week 1 crossover preview. But we know that when you're like Seattle and you have brand new parts to your offensive line, you always wonder if things are going to run smoothly. And you also probably have that same worry when you're shopping for new parts for your car. But you don't have to worry anymore by visiting rockauto.com. Rockauto.com has everything that you need, from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new floor mats. Get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. And the rockauto.com catalog is unique and easy to navigate, as you can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose by brand, specifications, and prices that you prefer. And the prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low. The same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So guys, I'm here with Corbin Smith of Locked On Seahawks, and we're going to flip the script a little bit, talk about what is going on with this Seattle Seahawk team. One of the things, Corbin, I've been talking about quite a bit on Locked On Falcons this week and sort of gearing up for this game is the expectation that this is a game that's going to be primarily determined by which team's offense gets off to that fast start. One of the things that we've talked about a lot in Atlanta is the continuity from their coaching staff will potentially allow them to get off to a faster start given the disrupted offseason that all NFL teams have experienced this year. Is that something that the Seahawks are potentially hanging their hat on? And is there some confidence that this offense can hit the ground running right away in week one?
They absolutely expect that. And Pete Carroll was asked today specifically about this, you know, how concerned are you with the tackling? And he kind of downplayed it a little bit, but without preseason games, that is certainly a real concern for all the teams out there. So they're going to need the offense to really be firing on all cylinders. And I will say this, getting the chance to watch Russell Wilson at training camp for most of camp this year, I don't know that I've ever seen him more locked in than what I have seen him this training camp. He has just been firing in all cylinders. He was sizzling in a red zone period last week, four straight passes with a touchdown to four different receivers. He just seems to have an incredible chemistry with so many different guys on this roster, which is why they were having a really hard time figuring out which five or six receivers to keep on the 53-man roster. When you have a quarterback like Wilson, he makes all of them look good. So they've got those receivers on the outside. Greg Olsen has looked fantastic so far. The Falcons know him very well. And this might be the best quarterback he's played with, not, you know, trying to insult Cam Newton, but Russell Wilson's been playing at an MVP level the last couple of seasons. So they've got Olsen. Will Disley, who did not play in the game in week 8 last year, gives him another really good tight end. He looks fully recovered from an Achilles injury. And then in the backfield, they've got 2,000-yard rushers. They have Chris Carson fully healthy coming back from his hip injury. And then Carlos Hyde, who they just in May decided, we'll give you a one-year deal. All he did was rush for over 1,000 yards last year. So as far as skill players, they have the pieces to come in and hit the ground running. The concern, as it always is in Seattle, though, has to be that offensive line. We've got three brand new starters on the right side. You've got a new center in there in Ethan Postick. He's been with the team, but has him in their starting center. Dwayne Brown and Mike Iupati are the only returning starters they've got in that group, and very little time to mesh in a position group that needs a lot of time to become a cohesive unit. And so that is the big X factor here. If they're not able to protect Russell Wilson, it won't matter how many weapons they have on the outside. That's really going to be the big key in this upcoming game. And really the early part of the season is, how does that line play? How do they protect? And can they open up run lanes for the talented backs that they've got back there?
And yeah, you talk about that offensive line, and you know, I happen to follow a oddly large amount of Seahawks Twitter, just weird crossover. But you know, one of the things that I constantly hear throughout the offseason and last season is the whole idea of let Russ cook. But we know with Seattle last year, they had a lot of success, you know, running the ball early in that game with Chris Carson. You mentioned the addition of Carlos Hyde. You talk about some of the concerns with the offensive line. Do you feel like Seattle, you know, this is not going to be a game where Seattle would let Russ cook and, you know, will rely heavily on that running game? And given those concerns along the offensive line with presumably three new starters along that right side of that offensive line, is that something that you feel like this offense can lean on?
I think they're going to be more aggressive from the outset. I've been gathering that from the moves they've made this offseason, that I think they are going to throw the ball a little bit more. Now, this is never going to be a team that says, we're going to drop back and throw 50 times. Pete Carroll will retire before that ever happens. That's just not his style. And with the running backs they've got, they're going to run the football. And I expect, with the familiarity they have with Dan Quinn being their former defensive coordinator, that Brian Schottenheimer is going to feel like he's going to be able to draw up a running game that's going to be effective, especially with the concerns every team is dealing with tackling. Guys don't like tackling Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde when they've had a lot of practice and a lot of games under their belt, let alone when there's been no preseason games. So I do think they are going to lean quite a bit in the ground game in this particular matchup. I do expect them to continue trending upward. Last year, there was an improvement in regard to how much they threw on first down. I think they're going to throw even more on first downs, be a bit more aggressive, maybe see a bit more up-tempo, but they are still going to run the football because that is Pete Carroll's bread and butter, and I would anticipate that's going to happen in this game.
Yeah, I would imagine Seahawks Twitter will you know, burn itself down if on the first snap of the game, you know, they let Wilson pass in terms of, you know, setting the tone for this upcoming season. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the changes on the offense, in that one of the things I've been speculating based off of their offseason moves is that Seattle is going to adopt a little bit more of the two tight end offense with the addition of Greg Olsen. They drafted two rookies in the draft. They have Will Disley, Jacob Hollister, and Luke Wilson, I believe, coming back. So they had seemed to have a deep group of tight ends. This Seattle offense has traditionally been, you know, a three wide receiver driven offense, single back sort of thing. But are they going to be a team that's going to use that two tight end offense primarily to push their passing game, or is this some way to sort of add a different element to their running game, or is it a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. I definitely anticipate you're going to see a lot more 12 personnel than what you've seen the first 2 years that Schottenheimer has been the offensive coordinator, in large part because they have the personnel to do it. If they can keep guys healthy, that's the big X factor here. Greg Olsen's had some injuries. He's 35 now. Will Disley's played in 10 games in 2 years. He's been fantastic when he's been healthy, but he's missed more than half the games, and he's had two very significant injuries. He looks fully healthy right now. The question is, can you keep him out there? And Jacob Hollister is really just a big wide receiver, and he was very good at it for them last year, finished third on the team in receptions. So they've got a lot of different bodies they can mix in there at that tight end position. I anticipate you're going to see Olsen and Disley out there a lot. You might even see some three tight end sets with Hollister out there with them as well. So it does give them a lot of different looks that they can pull out. This first game, who knows how much they're going to pull back from their vest in the first game of the season, but I definitely anticipate you're going to see a lot more 12 personnel in both running and passing situations to get Olsen and Disley on the field together.
Corbin, I want to switch things to the defensive side of the ball. The Seattle Seahawks have revamped their secondary. They're getting a full season of Quandre Diggs. They obviously picked up Jamal Adams, one of the best safeties in the NFL. They picked up Quentin Dunbar. Hey, he's been battling with Trey Flowers for a starting cornerback spot. They're adding a nickel cornerback to their defense, which they largely abandoned last season in safety Marquise Blair. I'm curious, you know, one of the things, and we'll get to the pass rush a little bit later, but with this defense, we know that the heights of Seattle defensively was when they had that top-notch secondary in the Legion of Boom, and now I'm not expecting anybody to expect this unit to reach those heights. But is this a defense that can make gains because of this secondary sort of driving the bus?
I absolutely think this defense can reemerge back into a top five, top 10 unit just by the couple moves that they made in the secondary. Obviously, they gave up a ton to get Jamal Adams. But if you've been at training camp, you can see why they gave up what they did for him. He's just such a unique talent. And the first time that they block him at practice on a blitz, now that'll be the first time they've actually done it, because there have been several times. There was one play specifically last week in the final week of training camp where Wilson took the snap, and as the ball was hitting his hand, Jamal Adams was already in his grill, and they had to blow the whistle right when it hit his hand. And he did stuff like that throughout camp. So that's just a different element. And Pete Carroll doesn't want to blitz his safeties a lot. That's never been his MO. But I think he is going to maybe have a change of heart having Jamal Adams out there, because he is just such a unique player, and he's underrated in coverage. They're going to drop him back more. I think he's going to have more opportunities to make plays on the football in this defense than he did in Greg Williams' defense. And then, of course, there's the real wild card here with Quentin Dunbar, who is an incredible talent, but he's had injury issues, and then what a turbulent offseason that young man has had. And even yesterday, we saw some more news that maybe he might be involved in this armed robbery that he got cleared of. We don't know what's going to happen there. Pete Carroll made it sound like he's going to be ready to go. He returned to practice on Wednesday. So right now, all signs are pointing to him being able to play. We just don't know who's going to be out there. I couldn't tell you right now if it's going to be Trey Flowers or Quentin Dunbar. Carroll's keeping that very close to his vest. We might not know until the teams take the field on Sunday which one of those guys is starting opposite of Shaquille Griffin. But either way, Flowers looked much better in camp. He's made strides in his third season. Dunbar's supposed to be an upgrade. Griffin's hoping to take another step after being a Pro Bowler last year. You get a full season with Quandre Diggs, who had three interceptions in five games last year. If they can put everything together, there's no question the talent is there for that to be an elite secondary, which by default is going to make their pass rush better.
And that's my next question. Is it going to make their pass rush good enough to, make significant gains from, as you've mentioned, what was the bottom of the league last year?
There's going to be so much talk in coming weeks throughout the entire season. Will Seattle regret letting Jadeveon Clowney go? The problem is Clowney had just three sacks last year. He's never had double-digit sacks. He is a phenomenal run defender. He had a high pressure rate. So you can't say that he wasn't disruptive rushing the passer. He scored two defensive touchdowns. But when you look from just a pure pass rushing standpoint, I think the Seahawks as a whole have a better looking front line. They actually have two guys that are threats to pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. Bruce Irvin coming back. He's played well against the Falcons in the past. He's played for the Falcons, so they're familiar with him. But he can pin his ears back and get after the quarterback. 8.5 sacks last year. And my wild card to really have a breakout year for the Seahawks this year is Benson Maiola. He's 28 years old. He was a late bloomer coming out of Idaho, 7 sacks, and he played just 29% of the Raiders' snaps last year. He's going to be their starter at the Leo position. I think he is the perfect fit for that spot. He's going to give them a little different dynamic they did not have last year. Really, the key, are you going to get similar production from Jaron Reed in the interior that you got from him 2 years ago? He had 10.5 sacks for the Seahawks at the defensive tackle spot. And then last year, he gets suspended the first 6 games, and he just was not the same player when he returned. He only had 2 sacks in 10 games, and he told reporters last week that he was just pressing too much. He was trying to make things happen, and he just really struggled as a result. And so they're hoping with him getting a new contract that he's going to bounce back. Maybe he doesn't get 10 sacks like he did 2 years ago, but if you can get 6 or 7 sacks even out of him this year from the interior with the other players that they have added, then by default, this pass rush should be better. And if the secondary is much improved as they expect, that's only going to make it easier for them. The clock is going to be ticking on quarterbacks and be tougher for them to find receivers. opens up more opportunities. So certainly it's a group with question marks. You don't have your second round pick in Daryl Taylor. He's out for the first 6 weeks, so that stings. You were hoping he was going to be an immediate contributor. But on the flip side, your fifth round pick in Alton Robinson's maybe been the biggest surprise on the defensive line in camp, and he might be ready to contribute on day one. He's going to get some snaps this Sunday. So they've got a lot of intriguing pieces there. There are certainly red flags. They don't have the superstar anymore like they had with Clowney, but you can make an argument the sum of the parts is better this year than it was a year ago.
Interesting. Corbin, that's going to do it for me with my questions. I know you're not necessarily a big fan of giving predictions for the upcoming game. I'm sure people on Locked On Seahawks will be able to check that out later in the week. But I'll just ask you for a general feeling about this game. Optimism, neutrality, pessimism. What are your thoughts?
I think neutrality is probably the best way to put it. I think this is going to be one of the biggest toss. I mean, every game in week one is always a toss up anyway, and this year especially given the COVID circumstances. But this one looks to me like two evenly matched teams that maybe the Falcons have a overall slightly more dynamic offense. If the Seahawks have everybody put together, the big question mark for me is the offensive line for them. I think the Falcons, if everybody's healthy, have a better offensive line. The defenses, Atlanta's got some key guys coming back. They added Fowler. The Seahawks obviously brought in Jamal Adams as well as Dunbar. Diggs with a full season. I just look at these two teams and I see two playoff contenders in Atlanta. There's not going to be any crowd factor around the league in general this year. So that's kind of neutral as it is. So right now I expect a very close game. I don't think it's going to be like last year where it's 24-0 and then suddenly it's 27-20. I don't expect craziness like that, but I think it's going to be a close game. And I'm leaning towards there being a lot of points in this game too, just because it's going to be tougher for defenses to be ready to play without preseason games and a very short training camp than it's going to be for the offenses.
All right, Corbin, let the Locked On Falcons listeners know where they can find your stuff, where they can hit you up on Twitter, and what else you got coming up on Locked On Seahawks later this week.
So you can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. On our Friday episode, we're going to be breaking down keys to the game for the Seahawks on offense and defense. Tons of Falcons talk, as we always do on our Friday leading up to games. So you might want to check it out. And if you don't like the analysis that we dish out, then you can let us know. We always appreciate constructive criticism. Make sure you include that first part, that it's constructive.
Absolutely. Well, for Locked On Seahawks listeners, they can check me out on Twitter at FalcFans, of course, on Locked On Falcons every day. And, you know, tomorrow we'll take a little bit deeper dive, taking some of this information that you've given us, Corbin, to, you know, recontextualize this matchup that we've already been discussing quite a bit already this week. So looking forward to that. All right, guys. Another Locked On crossover in the books. No, our first of 2020 now in the books. You know, Corbin will probably give his prediction tomorrow on Locked On Seahawks. So check that out. Sort of mine, you know, normally I kind of feel like in a quote unquote normal game, it would be like a 30-28 type of game, because I feel like both offenses are going to have some success against the opposing defense. But because of the potential possibility that teams will need to have to sort of knock the rust off and may not necessarily come out of the gates firing, you know, I'm kind of going with like a 24-20 Falcons win. But if it winds up being like 30-28, then, you know, I will claim that as well as part of the great prophecy. You know, that is sort of my thoughts on this upcoming game. I think it is a favorable matchup for the Falcons, but we'll see if they take care of business. I mean, that, you know, we know this team has well known for having very favorable matchups and not taking care of business, particularly last year when they started 1-7 and in the year before when they started 1-4. So we'll see if this year is different going up against this Seahawk team. So there you guys have it. Appreciate you tuning in for another crossover episode, our first of 2020. We will continue crossover Thursdays every single week. We'll be back tomorrow with more content, gearing up for this game, talking a little bit more news, maybe giving you some injury updates, all those various things. And if you have any questions, comments, feedback, you can provide it via Twitter at Locked On Falcons, via Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or via email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team,
every day.
I'm going to have you pause it real quick.
Okay.
My cat feeders are getting ready to go off. We have four cats, and so our automatic feeders are going to be going off. And so I'm just – there we go. There's the first one. I got to make sure the right ones end up where they need to be. Where's my – that's just a circus, dude.